Blog Talk Radio.
Wherever you may be in this world, welcome to Hospice Survivors and Victims. I am your host, Carly Walden. The purpose of this show continues and will always be to expose the corruption that is occurring in both our healthcare system and the judicial system, where we have stealth euthanasia. We are facing the tough issues, and we are having the conversations that people do not want to discuss about what's really occurring in this nation with end-of-life issues when it comes to hospice and many other facilities where people's loved ones are being murdered. And it's for money, most of the time for profit. Now, I just wanted to preface that and remind everyone what this show will continue to do every time we are facing the tough issues. Tonight we have a wonderful guest, and I'm so excited to have her on. Her name is Susan Moxley, and she is going to explain to us tonight, unfortunately, how her father was murdered in a hospice. And I just want to welcome you to the show, Susan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for coming on. I just wanted to tell you how sorry I am and, you know, give you my condolences about what happened to your dad. I do these shows still very difficult for me to do this just because of, this is a tough reality to face that we're living in today. And so with that being said, you know, I just wanted you to start, you know, from the beginning, and I'm really going to listen and take in, and our listeners, to your story, how this all happened with your father. And hopefully we can all learn and we can prevent death in the future from this culture of death that we're dealing with. So if you don't mind, will you start from the beginning and just let us know what happened?
All right. First of all, I've never done this before, so I'm a little bit nervous, so bear with me.
Absolutely.
As Carly said, I'd like to tell my story, and I'd like to think that my dad is up in heaven looking down and hopefully is probably thinking, Susan, bite your tongue and don't say too much. And because he was a really patient, kind soul, never got excited about anything. In fact, he was a real baseball lover. Actually, when he went into the hospice home, I'll progress just a little bit and then I'll digress. He was in his room and was doing fine, eating his dinner, and he was like, "What channel's the World Series game on? Tonight's the first night. Got to find it because I got to see the Astros win. They're the underdogs." Well, as it turns out, he never got to see the Astros win that series. I really hate that. But anyway, back to the story. How it all started was my dad was 91. He was in pretty good health except for COPD. His mind was sharp as a tack. He did the bills at home. He kept up with the stock, you name it. you know, there was nothing to worry about cognitively with him. But he started having more breathing issues. And I know he went to the doctor one day and asked him, have you done all that you could do for me? And that's mm-hmm. when I think that, can you hear me? That's when
yes,
the doctor,
I'm just listening.
The doctors kind of changed their tune about care, in my opinion, and that's when they started the whole bit about hospice. Well, let's try hospice for you. And so my in-home hospice, that is, my mother was against them from the start, and so she's always been sort of a standoffish, more observing, I guess, to start with. And my brother and I kept thinking, well, maybe this will be okay. It sounds kind of gloomy, but, you know, when they say you're expected mm-hmm. to die within 6 months or something, that was pretty hard to swallow. But when they started talking about all their services and they can do this and they can do that, making it sound like mm-hmm. they were going to be wonderful. And mm-hmm. so, you know, of course they wanted to do the DNR, the do not resuscitate, and gave mom the sticker to place upon her refrigerator, which she later did not put on her refrigerator and actually hid it, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But
she did.
Anyhow,
okay. See, that's one thing that they do. You talked about all these services. Well, you know, I was speaking with a hospice nurse that quit because she saw that they were killing all of these our older people this week. And she said that is one way that they get so many people is they tempt them, you know, to get on that program with all of these benefits and all of these services that they offer to the family. And so that's exactly the tactics that they use. So I'm glad that you brought that up because that's
one thing we need to watch for. Yeah, one of those was even as far as promising something that they don't regularly do. My daughter was going to get married, actually did get married, and so we were concerned about would my dad be able to make the wedding because it was going to be an outdoor wedding in July, and I live in North Carolina, and it is hot and humid in July. And so I was talking to the hospice nurse about that, and she was like, oh, we've got that covered. We've got that covered. We'll have somebody here for him, and if he thinks he can go, I'll go along with him, or someone else will go along with him and make sure that he is there. Well, we later found out they could not do that. So anyway, that was
one of the
bribery.
So that was too enticed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the lies. And then I guess what amazed me was when they were there that first day, they started taking away his meds. They were like, you don't need this one and you don't need that one. And I'm like, well, you're not a doctor. But at the same time, I didn't want to really say that. But, you know, I just thought, well, maybe they know what they're doing. And then, and what was so odd about it all, he really loved those ladies. They came out about twice a week to check on him, do some care work with him and stuff. And he just thought they were wonderful. And actually he started doing better. And I thought, well, okay, maybe that was it. Since he's not going to a pulmonologist one day, an oncologist the next day, a dermatologist the next day, because they want you to stop seeing all these physicians. Another tactic that they use. So anyway, we thought he was doing better, and really he did do better. He started that program in April of last year, and he got worse in October. When I say worse, he wasn't really worse, but it was more of an average type of day that might not be so good for him. Like he had a breathing episode where he would get short of breath and get a little bit anxious and stuff. And usually my mom would give him a breathing treatment and he would calm down and would be able to breathe and talk and all.
Okay.
So anyway, let's see, what do you need to ask me? I feel like I'm kind of just jumping around here.
No, you're doing great. No, you're doing great. I'm just listening. I just want to be very quiet because I want to make sure we all get this down. It's so important. So, no, I'm following you right along the breathing treatment. Okay, so in October, he started to kind of, it was average. Okay, so So
I mean,
we're
he
in October.
Yeah, he didn't have any episodes of pneumonia or anything like that that summer. The 2 years prior to that, he did have pneumonia once, and then they thought within a week that he had a collapsed lung, and as it turns out, it was not a collapsed lung, and I think they just basically let him out of the hospital too soon. But anyway, yeah, in October when his nurse or the aide was there, he had one of his breathing episodes, and she got very, I think, excited about it and probably overreacted and called her nurse to come out. So the nurse came out, and, of course, they immediately gave him the Ativan, and she was like, we just need to take you into the hospice house and let you rest for a couple of days. Rest for a couple of days, assuring him that he would be home, everything was going to be okay, that sort of thing. And they called the ambulance. He even walked to the ambulance because he was like, I don't need an ambulance. And they're like, yeah, we have to take you in an ambulance to the place. I call it the
They are taking him in an ambulance, and they are lying, saying that he's going to get a few days good rest. That's what they lied to our family and said. It makes my hair stand up. Okay.
Yeah, that was on a Monday. The previous day, on Sunday, he had actually gone to church. He loved going to church. He lived to go to church. And that particular day, the church has a handicap ramp, but he refused to go up it. He would walk the steps to go into the church. So he did that on Sunday. And Monday, then, they put him in the hospice house, telling him he was having breathing issues, and he just needed to rest a little bit. And he might have a lung infection that was also thrown in. But, yeah, you'll come back home. You'll come back home.
So they're promising him, you're just going to get a few days good rest, and then you're going to come back home, and everything's going to be great, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, they gave him more Ativan, I noticed, in the medical records that day, too. And then I was at work when all this happened, by the way. My sister-in-law is a nurse, and she happened to be at my parents' house when all this happened. And so she blames herself, just as well as I blame myself, for all this occurring. She was like, I should not have let them take him. And I'm like, no, it's not your fault. It's nobody's fault, kind of thing.
Right.
But anyway, he went. He had a little nap. I think they fixed him a late lunch, they said, because he had missed lunch. And then they tried to give him some more, either morphine or Ativan 1, and he told him he didn't want anything that was going to make him go to sleep because he wanted to stay awake and watch the ball game, the World Series ball game.
Okay, so he's telling them, I want to stay awake and I want to watch the ball game. Okay.
I'm just pointing that out.
That's a very strong statement.
I'm there until probably maybe 9 o'clock-ish, sometime around then, because I thought he might be. I didn't really know if he'd make it throughout the whole ball game or not, but I think he made it through most of it. But I left thinking that he was fine, that he was going to be coming home the next day, you know, as well as he was acting and feeling, talking, laughing, all that. Had no idea that things were going to progress like they did. So the next day, which is on Tuesday, or actually let me back up a minute. I talked to the director, the facility director, that first night, and said something about how's he doing or whatever, you know, and she was giving me her spiel. And then she was like, you know, I heard the DNR got destroyed. And I said, yeah, that's what I heard too. The DNR did get destroyed. But she was like, well, we may need to have a family meeting about this. Not now, but soon. And I said, okay, because I really didn't want to do anything without my brother, you know, talking with him and stuff. And so turns out on Tuesday, sometime during the day on Tuesday, they did not have a family meeting. Someone from hospice, I'm assuming there must have been at least two of them to have a witness, talked to my dad and got him to sign another DNR. So when I came back in Tuesday afternoon, first thing they hit me with was, oh, we got the DNR. I'm like, you did? And so the nurse actually pulled out the form, and I was like, okay, not really knowing what to say.
Right.
I was a little later getting there that night than I wanted to be, but I couldn't help it for other circumstances. So I said, well, I'm going to go back and see him. And she's like, no, don't go back there. I'm, you know, seeing red flags go off. And I'm like, why not? And she was like, yeah, well, he's asleep. He had a bad night last night. And I said, really? I was here last night.
So she's telling you to not go back there and see your father, literally, the hospice nurse.
Literally, yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So it's a very small facility. It may only have, like, six rooms or something. But I actually could hear him snoring because he snores loud anyway. So I could hear him snoring, and I thought, okay, maybe he just, you know, he needs the rest. I'm not going to go back there and see him and stuff. So I didn't, and so I was talking to the nurse again, and she was like, yeah, he had a bad night. And I said, what do you mean he had a bad night? And she was like, well, he kept trying to get up to go pee. He wouldn't use the urinal. He just kept trying to stand there. And he got all excited about that and had an accident, and then his breathing became very labored. And so we gave him some stuff for that. And so I'm assuming that it was probably more of the morphine and Ativan, because I think she mentioned that to calm him. She said it would help to calm him so he could breathe better. Okay,
see,
that
that's
was all
a lie.
I was told.
That's
all
one
I was
their
told
biggest
about
lies.
That.
Morphine stops the heart. It stops the breathing. And that's one thing that all hospices, I mean, that, literally, they say it helps with their breathing, and it doesn't. It's a lie. It stops the heart. It stops the breathing. Okay. So do you know the Haldol was being given as well, correct?
Cocktail? When I was there the last night, let me back up just a second. So that was the night I said that I found out, you know, he was asleep, and they had gotten the DNR, yada, yada, yada. So went back the next day then, and he was worse. And I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, well, he's been really sick on his stomach. He can't keep anything down. And we're trying different things to help him. We've not given him a lot because we don't want him to, you know, continue throwing up. So he did have, I think they said he had a breakfast, but that he had thrown the breakfast up. So they didn't want to give him anything else, supposedly. So he started going downhill from there, and they tried to do, I think they gave him Zofran for the nausea, and it wasn't helping much, and so he just continued to go downhill throughout the day. And late that afternoon, I had a friend come by who was a nurse, who used to be a hospice nurse, and I kept quizzing her about it, and she really wouldn't come out and be against hospice. She had some friends who worked there, and I don't know if she didn't want to alarm me more. I don't know. Politically, I just don't know why she didn't tell me what she knew. But anyway.
Okay, but you know that she knew, well, obviously. Yes.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
She knew what they were doing. She knew what was going on.
But she said, I'm so glad I got to talk to him. And that just set off a red flag thinking, it sounds like you think he's dying. And in fact, I even said, do I need to get him out of here? Do I need to take him to the hospital? What would you do? Because I really didn't know, because I thought, well, maybe he's just got some kind of virus, or maybe he just needed some extra rest. Maybe the stomach bug, if he had a stomach bug, was really, you know, bringing him down. And she would never say, and I was like, just tell me what you would do. And she was like, that's just a decision that you're going to have to make. And so after she left, then, I mean, he was sitting there with this dazed look in his face, in his eyes, like he was looking off into the distance, not talking, just like a knot on a log, basically. And I tried to say hey and stuff, and I could tell he wasn't. He would just sort of shake his head and stuff. And then the nurse came in, because he had gotten sick when I was out of the room talking with my nurse friend, the former hospice nurse. And so she came in then. And she said, Mr. Moxley, we really don't like to do this. That's her exact words. We really don't like to do this, but we're going to try some Haldol to see if that will help with this nausea and vomiting that you're having. And so I, at the time, did not know what Haldol was. And, you know, just assumed that they were trying to help. Well, within 30 minutes, he went to sleep, and he never woke up. Because I kept thinking, I stayed that night, because my friend said, you might want to stay tonight. Are you and your brother going to be here? And I said, yeah, probably one of us will stay. So I ended up staying all night. I don't think he moved the entire night. He was asleep on his back with his mouth open. And the last time I saw him in that same exact position. So I just think that the Haldol did him in.
Mixed with, you know, and that's what I say, because I've witnessed this, you know, especially with his mouth open. You know, the morphine combined with the Ativan and the Haldol, that is a lethal drug cocktail. And so he was most likely reacting to the morphine and the medication, and it was making him sick. And, you know, yeah, the Zofran would not help when they're giving him, you know, they load them up with so much morphine and Ativan and Haldol, because they're killing them. They're hastening their death. That's what's going on here. And, you know, people like, just like, and they're so, that's why, you know, they're so sly about what they're doing. They are very, they know what they're doing, and they are so stealth. They're so good at covering it. They're covering it up. And while they're doing it, and so you know, and see your friend, you know, whom I was, you know, the hospice nurse, she knew what they were doing, and she knew that that Haldol was going to be the last thing that was going to be given to him, and that's the lethal shot that they gave. And took and put him into an eternal sedation.
I believe so too. And then I actually got the medical records. I requested it. He died in October. I had my accident in November. I think it was maybe toward the end of November when I requested them. I finally got them around maybe the 1st of January-ish or so. I couldn't look at them for 3 weeks. I finally did look at them. And it just really upset me. You used to see my post on Facebook and stuff. It was pretty traumatic, you know, and I was going through this stuff.
This is
like,
very traumatic. This is one of the hardest things I think that anyone, any family person can go through. I really
when
do.
I saw the medical, when I read the medical records for the first time, of course, it made me mad. It made me furious. It made me cry. It made me want to go down there and say, you lied.
Right.
I didn't say that. Why did you put this note about another person in here that was irrelevant to my dad's care? You had no business putting stuff like that in there. What I noticed tonight when I was going back through the records in preparation for this call, I noticed that he was given morphine orally as well as injection. And I didn't know they were doing that, the Ativan and the morphine by mouth, morphine injection, and the Haldol. And I don't know what the difference between morphine sulfate and morphine is, but both.
Well, there's rocks. That's Roxanol. Morphine sulfate, that's the most concentrated form of morphine. Okay, so it's like that's the most concentrated form. It's very strong. And, you know, and it's common for them, you know, that it just makes me so sick. I'm so sorry. I'm so just incensed by what they're doing and what they're getting away with.
Well, for you backtrack a second to that first night when I was there and I said he was watching the ball game. And then I went home, and supposedly he got worse because he, you know, had to go to the bathroom, you know, kind of thing, and got his breathing all out of whack for a while. When all this was over, said, and done, my sister-in-law brother went down to talk to the hospice people about it, because I told them from day one after he died, that I said, they killed him. You know, this is not right. You go back and look and stuff. And so they did not know that I was not still home from my sick leave, but actually I had gone back to work. No, wait a minute, I take that back. I was still home. But I didn't. They didn't. Couldn't get in touch with me that day. They had made an appointment with the hospice folks, and so they went down and talked to them. And basically, my sister-in-law said that she thought that they killed him. And of course, their mouths all fell open, and they're like, "How could you think such a thing? We are Christian people." Blah 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 blah.
And wake up, Christians that are out there. This is happening, and you're not. And people that know this, this is not mercy. This is comfort care. This is not okay. And you know, Marty Oakley also says this. Where are the Christians at that are supposed to be standing up to this evil that is occurring? Where are you at? And why are you silent about it? I mean, literally. And you know, maybe that. They literally believe that mercy killing, murder is murder. This is just being done with you know, medication instead of a gun. That's the only difference.
Exactly.
Okay, so they were like, once they were confronted, they dropped their mouth and said, "We're Christians."
And then they told her that they thought that he had had a heart attack. Remember the night I said that he got up and, you know, he got agitated, or not agitated, but got anxious because he had had an accident and, you know, then couldn't breathe well. One of the nurses said they thought he had a heart attack that night. And I said, well, that's funny to me. When I talked to them, nothing was ever mentioned about a heart attack happening that night. They just blamed it on him getting anxious. And that's why his breathing got so labored and stuff. So where in the world a heart attack came from, we don't know.
Oh, that isn't that it, yeah,
and
really.
There was no
EKG mean, isn't that
test?
Something? Because they falsify, they lie, they falsify the medical records. I mean, and why would you not tell the family something like that?
Exactly.
That just angers me to no end. Okay. All right. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but okay. So, you know, what that taking us back to, you know, that night when your nurse friend that was a hospice nurse said, well, you and your brother might want to stay here throughout the night. When did he pass after they gave, how long, you know, after they gave him that Haldol did he pass?
It was the next morning. They gave him the Haldol sometime after supper that Thursday night. And like I said, he immediately went to sleep about 30 or 40 minutes later. And I know the next morning I woke up really early, about maybe, you know, 6-ish or 7, probably 6. And I could tell he hadn't moved. And so some of the people were coming in to check on him then. And they have in the notes that I had said on two different occasions, don't give him any morphine. I want to see if he wakes up. If I said that, I don't remember it, but maybe I did say it in my sleep or something. But they had said that I also said that I thought he might, or could he have a virus? And they said that they counseled me on all the, you know, the dying process and all that. And one of the things in the notes, I even wrote it down, it says, I stated the goals of care are comfort only. I never stated that the goals of their care are comfort only. And they put in another place that I was okay with things. I'm like, I never said I was okay with that. I remember distinctly telling her when she was saying that he was going to be dying probably in a couple of days, I remember saying, I'm still trying to digest this. That's all I said. I'm still trying to digest this. But they gave him 2 days initially to live that morning of the or the next day after the Haldol. But he died within 2 hours of that. So, I mean, my brother didn't even have a chance to get down there. And my mother had gotten there, but it was just so quick.
Yeah, that's, and that this just breaks my heart. I mean, it breaks my heart so bad. Your story sounds so much like my story, because when I went back in the medical records, they lied about things too, that talking about counseled the family, educated the family on what to expect with death and the signs to, all of that. They lie. They do. They lie, which I don't understand, So I know and believe 100%. This is just, it's just unbelievable. It's unthinkable that people are doing this to our loved ones. And it's, I mean, it's happening. And I'm enraged. I know that you are enraged. And it's so difficult for us to get justice. We have got to keep telling our stories, and we have got to get this stopped. I mean,
exactly.
It has got to stop. And this trickery and, lying to the families. And then, you guys didn't give informed consent. That's what people don't realize is once, your loved one is signed onto a hospice program, that gives that director, you mentioned talking to the director of the hospice, that physician will get a physician order form and puts down, like, the morphine sulfate. Okay, you got the record, okay? And he'll check that off. And then the Ativan, the Seroquel, the Haldol, and, anything that they may need to put this person into an internal sedation. And that's what's occurring in so many rogue hospices across this country. I cannot say every one, but I'm going to let you folks know that this is happening in many across this country. And we must wake up and be aware of what is happening. This is terrible, for people to live through, and we don't want you to live through it. And listen to our voice, and so you don't have to go through the heartbreak, and the realization of what they actually did. The deception is a lot, and especially, like you mentioned to me, Susan, he liked those women. He trusted them.
He did.
He trusted those nurses that were coming in, and so many families are doing the same thing right now, today, right this moment. There's a hospice nurse coming into a home, or they're in an inpatient, facility, and they're doing the same thing to someone else. And quite frankly, I think this is one of the most uncovered stories that is going on in this nation. It literally is. I mean, so, what, did your father, did he ever say throughout what was going on with him? Did he ever say, he said he didn't, I don't understand what part of I don't want to take any more morphine they didn't understand, but they're just overriding people.
Mm-hmm.
And, right then he was not giving informed consent for them to give him morphine, right there with that statement. What part of that do these hospice nurses, it makes me so mad, do they not understand? Because I did the same thing with my grandmother,
told us that he wasn't ready to die. He wanted to live. He still had enough life in him before he went to hospice. Even though he was having the breathing issues, he still wanted to live long enough to, still go to church, be with his family. In fact, my daughter had just found out she was pregnant and had told him 3 weeks before he died, and his statement was something like, "Well, maybe I'll live long enough to see it next year." because the baby mm-hmm. will be born this June. And so that's the last time that she ever talked to him. So it's strange. The day that he was buried, they actually went to the doctor, and that's when they had the first sonogram done. I'm going to cry. So
it's
it was
okay,
like,
sweet. It's okay.
We put him in the ground that morning, and yet they went to see a new life, their baby, that afternoon. I wish he could have lived long enough, you know, to see the child that would have been his only, probably great grandchild. But it didn't work out. So, but I hold them responsible for it all. Really,
yes,
do.
Yes. I'm so sorry. I am just so sorry to hear that. You know,
but
I really am.
Another thing that the hospice director said when my sister-in-law confronted her was, well, we're nonprofit. Why would we want to do that? We're nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that mm-hmm. statement?
I think that, no, that they get a quick, this is a hospice is paid for 100% by Medicare. This is a government-funded program. So the government's funding this program, and they get a quick government check. That's what this is about, is they get a quick government check. It's disgusting. They do get profit. They do get money. And it doesn't matter if they're in there for, you know, one day or 7 days or, you know, and I can remember this. I can remember my grandmother's doctor saying, well, you know, there's just not any more hospices, not many left that are 6 month facilities or anything like that anymore. Cause see, they can do it so quickly,
mm-hmm.
you know, now, but what do I think about that? I think it's a lie. I think it's disgusting. I do think a lot of people know exactly what they're doing, and the nurses, and then a lot of them think it's okay because they've been taught that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a very, very complex thing, but people should know. So I want you to talk a little bit more, if you don't mind, because I am so proud that your brother, and it was your sister-in-law,
correct. Yeah.
That went down and confronted this director of the hospice, which I'm sure works somewhere else, but at another hospital, probably, most likely. That's usually how they do. It was a doctor, correct?
No, it was the director. She's an RN. I don't know if she has her master's or what. I think there was, I never saw a quote doctor. I may have seen, I don't even know if she was a PA. It seems like that her name tag had some other initials behind it. But anyway, that person, the director, and actually the clergyman, he was there. So they didn't want to talk to her initially. They wanted her to come back, make an appointment. And so then, you know, the three of them could talk to them. So they had enough time, I guess, to get prepared and all that. And another reason I didn't mm-hmm. want to go talk to them was because I wanted the facts. I wanted to see that medical record. I didn't want to go in there being emotionally unstable. I didn't want to say anything incorrectly because I was grieving. I didn't want it to come across that I was angry. I wanted the facts
right.
first. That's why I have not yet done anything as far as filing anything with Medicare, Medicaid, or the CMS, I mean, and
mm-hmm.
the State Department of Health. That's on my to-do list, but I wanted to get everything down
right.
pat, calm, and organized instead of just flying.
That's very smart. That's
and,
very
and
smart. I want you
little...
to know that you can also, you would be surprised, but there is a treasure trove of evidence in the pharmacy records. You can put this in writing, okay? You don't have to go down there. But you can request this in writing to the hospice, that they include all of the, you know, all of the medical records, all of the nurse's notes, all of the pharmacy records, and, you know, any electronic records as well, any emails that were sent, any faxes that were made. This is so important because, you know, like I said again, you're going to find, just like you already have, discrepancies in these medical records, because I can remember going through ours, and you do want to take your time and be very meticulous, and they're going to mess up, okay, somewhere, and you're going to, you'll find the discrepancy. And so, but you can request that in writing is what I'm, the point that I'm trying to make. But make sure you include the pharmacy records. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know if they most likely have an in-house pharmacy because it was an inpatient facility. But if not, then they contract somewhere outside. But just, I just want you to remember that, you know, Susan, when you go to do that,
okay,
and get that. Have you gotten... Let me ask, what have you already, okay, so getting back to, I want to hear exactly what they told your sister-in-law and your brother. I'm really curious to hear what they had to say.
Well, I mean, most of it I think I've already told you. My memory right now is so bad. I can't remember everything that she told me that they did say. In fact, I wish that she were here so that she could tell you all about
that.
That's
okay.
But I think she came away feeling more relaxed, feeling better about the situation. And I'm like, how
mm-hmm.
can you feel better about a situation where they took my dad's life? I'm sorry,
right.
But no, I'm not going to let them sweet talk me into that.
Right.
So
it
kind of was a bad subject between us for a little bit. But, you know, I think she still blames herself, like I said earlier, because she was there the day that they came to get him, and she said, I shouldn't have let him, should not have let them take him. And
mm-hmm.
so I think she carries some grief with that too. But I don't know. I don't know if Faith just conned her or did con her about that, believing
mm-hmm.
what they did was right. And the whole bit about the heart attack, making her think that, you know, did he have a heart attack or not? Well, how can they know he had a heart attack if they didn't do an EKG, they didn't do a blood test, you know, there was nothing done.
Right, right. So that, you know, that's just, you know, that's just preposterous. I mean, really it is. And then for the family to not even be called, you know, is preposterous. And, you know, that is just, it just makes me so sick. I want people to wake up, and I want them to real, just like what you're sharing with us. Everything you're saying, I can bear witness to because I went through the same thing. And everything that you're telling me is what I witnessed. Everyone that was in, you know, it was an inpatient hospice facility. They were all laying in there. No one was up talking, none of that. They were all laying there with their mouths wide open, like a donut hole.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
You know what I'm talking about? That yeah, like
mm-hmm.
that, like it's like a donut look. And, you
so
know, that's
passed,
coming from.
Yeah, after he passed, my mother even said, can't they do something about his mouth? And I said,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they'll fix that. They'll fix that, which they
mm-hmm.
did at the funeral home. The nurses could not do anything. But that leads me to another point,
mm-hmm.
autopsy. They were quick
okay.
to get him to the funeral home. In fact, I said, no, don't move him yet, because they're like, we want to take his oxygen off now. I said, no, do not do anything until my brother gets here. I want him to walk in and see Dad, just like he is now. You know, it was something about having the oxygen on him that was comforting to me. It just made me think, well, he's still alive. He's still got that oxygen going. I mean, I know that wasn't what was going on, obviously,
yeah.
at all, because he had already passed. But they were quick,
yeah.
though, once my brother came down and the pastor came down and some other friends. They were kind of quick about wanting to go ahead and get him out of the room and sent to the funeral home and that sort of thing. And if I had thought about it then, I should have, you know, said we want to do an autopsy. But hindsight.
That's a very important point because a lot of people, you know, they do try to rush it. And a lot of times they will cremate the person and then that is destroying evidence. And it really is. And so, because now we've caught on to what's going on. We know what's going on. And, you know, so a lot of times they'll do that. And I'm glad you brought that point up because a lot of times, and hopefully people will get an honest medical examiner that will go and test and see what was in, you know, that person's body instead of just putting down what was written on the prescription for them to initiate hospice to begin with, because a lot of times that happens is they'll put down what was initiated, you know, on that prescription, because the prescription has to be written for hospice. And I want people to know there is an alternative. There is home health care. If you need help with your loved ones, home health care agencies, they have physical therapists, occupational therapists, you know, RNs, and bath aides. They come out and bathe your loved ones. I want you to know I recommend that every day. If you have a loved one that's at home and sick, you know, but see, people are not, you know, when we get to end of life issues, it's very complex. So people don't, you know these things. Like I know, like you said, back in hindsight, but I'm so glad that you brought that up because autopsies are critical and it can prove that what they did to your loved one. You know, if you get an honest, truthful medical examiner, because once again, a lot of these people are working together and they're hiding stuff. It's, I know it sounds crazy, but it's not. It's actually the reality of what's happening. So, okay, so you weren't able to get the autopsy. Why were you not able to get the autopsy done?
Well, I didn't even think about it. I wasn't pushing for it. I didn't even think about it at the time because you know how it is when there's a death and there are so many things you have to take care of as far as, you know, funeral arrangements, flowers, notification of people. You know, it's like they throw all this stuff at you and you don't even have time to think. And that's another reason I guess I didn't want to go down there and talk to the director until, you know, I knew more of the facts and so forth. Like I said, I didn't want to go down there like a grieving, distraught person who didn't know her facts, my whole grand type of thing. And then now, you know, it's kind of like, why talk to the director? Why do I want to talk to her? She's just going to give me her song and dance that she gave my sister-in-law and brother. I need to take it to the feds. I need to take it to somebody that's going to make a difference. But it's like you're advocating to do. It takes, it's going to take numbers
it is.
Of people. It's going to take money.
Yes, ma'am.
It's going to take money. That's the whole, that's what's backing all this is just financial in the government. So I feel like
hospice is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And it's like, get them in, get them out, get them, you know, it's like, it is, I call it the invisible Holocaust. It's called, you know, the elder cost, but you know, they're also doing this. We had Alex Schattenberg on last week and he goes around speaking about self euthanasia and they're doing this to babies where they're giving babies these lethal drug cocktails. And it's just horrifying. It horrifies me. What our healthcare is in crisis, and people, we are waking people up. That's what we're doing. And it, you know, it is going to take a grassroots movement, a huge grassroots movement, to get
I've
the
told
attention.
Everybody, yeah, mm-hmm. I've told everybody that I can, you know, personal acquaintances, what happened, and my feelings toward the whole situation, and my feelings toward hospice's care, even though I don't think hospice may be entirely wrong, depending on the circumstance. Like, I know someone who had really, really bad cancer. She had mets to her brain, just all over her body, and she was in such excruciating pain. She was begging, literally begging, to die. Mm-hmm. And so she eventually did pass on. But, you know, to watch her suffer like that, and her wishing that she could die. You know, who am I to say no? We can't kill you. Because if I were mm-hmm. in her shoes, and I were, you know, that in pain, and I knew that there was no glimmer of hope for me whatsoever, and I was on my deathbed, yeah, go ahead and shoot me up and kill me. But just to do like they did my dad, like they were going to do
your
grandmother,
I mean, the difference,
you know,
here
that's
is
wrong.
Like we, the difference here is that there is pain management, and I believe in that for people that are in serious pain, of course. But I'm sorry, I do not agree with just going ahead and killing someone. I believe in a natural death occurring in God's timing.
Exactly.
And you can manage the pain. You can. I mean, you can, hey, we've come a long way in medicine, and you can manage that person's pain, but you don't just put them out of their misery, you know, just put them out, because, you know, you can make them, if it's not what the Good Samaritan outfit that people think that it is, and
exactly.
what they see on TV, and what they, it's not, it's become this ugly, you know, and I'll say what the EMT told me is the morphine hotel, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's just become this killing machine where they're making billions of dollars off of our loved ones that worked and paid into Social Security, paid into to have Medicare and all of these to take care of them. Not when they start becoming a burden and they have these, you know, once you get old, you're going to have, you know, it doesn't matter. You're going to face issues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have things. You know, it doesn't matter if you're younger, older, whatever. It happens to everyone. But we're all going to die one day. But, my God, do not hasten my death is what I'm saying. Don't hasten our loved one's death by doing this. They're playing God. In my opinion, they're literally playing God, and you don't do that.
You don't do that. I'm sitting here looking at the record, and it says, denies does not exhibit pain. Level of pain is acceptable to patient. Denies pain at present, severity, zero. But yet it says in another part, they're giving him morphine for pain. It makes no sense.
Okay. That does make no sense, other than the fact that they were hastening his death. That's what
mm-hmm.
makes sense. Because there is no other explanation. If he's not in pain, he stated that he doesn't want morphine. Therefore, he was not giving them consent to give him. That came out of his own mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And they went against his wishes.
Right. But, you know, what gets
and
me
did what they wanted to anyway. That's the most disgusting. I don't see how these people sleep at night. I swear, I really don't.
This is a brand new facility that they built. It's absolutely beautiful. Beautiful on the outside, beautiful on the inside. You go in the backyard, there's like a playground set, picnic tables, nice chairs. You go around to the other yard, there's a fire pit there, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, who the hell do you think is going to be out here in a fire pit when they have a loved one indoors that you're killing? You know, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That just
infuriates
me.
No, you're absolutely right.
But people
right.
think it's absolutely wonderful that that's the greatest thing that this county has ever gotten. We're a small rural county, and I think they think mm-hmm. we're coming up into the, you know, coming up in society now. We're getting into the 21st century kind of thing, and people just think that it's wonderful. So when I get on my crusade about how horrible it is, some people uh-huh. look at me and want to hear my story, and, you know, they're like, thank you for telling me all this. I didn't know that hospice could do this, and, you know, I didn't know this was occurring. And then I have the other extreme where people are looking at me like, you've lost your freaking mind. You know, you're just mm-hmm. distraught over your dad's death. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening across the world, not just the U.S. I've talked to people in other countries who said that it's becoming a problem there. So it's going to be worldwide. And that's
oh, you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right, Susan. I mean, and it is. It's happening across. It is worldwide. I mean, that's what we were talking about on our last show. You know, and people that I hate it when they do that. When they say, "Oh, you're just distraught. You're grieving. You're, you know, this is crazy." They would never do anything like that. Hello, people. It's time to wake up. They're doing it. And, mm-hmm. you know, oh, it just, you know, this has got to be one of the most evil things that I have seen. It's no different than what happened, in my opinion, in the Holocaust. I mean, exactly. You know, literally. But, you know, I mean, this is the most horrible thing I've ever witnessed in my life, ever. And I know it is for you too. And, you know, for us, the best thing I know, and what the conclusion that I have come to, is exposing this and being an elder advocate and staying strong with it and not, you know, being relentless when it comes to fighting for your loved one. And if this has happened to you, do not feel guilty. You are trusting people. But I tell you what, fight back and give your loved one a voice, just like Susan, thank you so much, has done tonight, because her story is going to save so many other people's lives. And that's what this whole show is about, is saving lives, is letting, you know, Susan... I mean, I'm almost in tears because of what you have gone through. I literally can feel your pain, you know. And I know that you're still dealing with it, you know, on a daily basis, and that will probably happen for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, but to be able to recognize it and see it and call it for what it is a very powerful thing.
What gets me is my dad was born, I feel like he was cheated out of his mother, and he was cheated out of his life there at the end, because his mother died in childbirth, so obviously he never saw his mother. And then here at the end, he was treated like he was. But the only calming thing out of all this is that he is now in heaven and is getting to see his mother for the first time.
Yes.
So that yes. does give me some comfort.
Oh, absolutely.
But I would like to, what I told somebody on Facebook, I would love to create a bumper sticker or a car magnet that says hospice kills, kind of like the cigarette sticker thing that has a circle with a cigarette in the middle with a red line through it. Do that just in place of the cigarette, just put hospice. Or your hospice
kid. I think that's a great idea. I'd be all in for that, really. I would support that 100%. So I think that's a wonderful idea. Well, you know, we're getting close to the show ending here. We have about 1 minute left, Susan. You have been a wonderful guest. I appreciate so much from the bottom of my heart. You know,
thank you
coming
you
on
me.
And
thank you for allowing me the opportunity. And I'm glad you're doing what you are doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's, you know, we have to be strong and face this evil. I cannot stand it. It's the most evil thing I've seen. And no one deserves this. No family, I don't care. No one deserves this. This is inhumane. We've got to get this stopped. And let me ask you, as we close out the show, is there anything that you would like to say to our audience before we close out? Those that are listening and probably a lot of people probably dealing with this very thing now.
My two words I like to say: be informed. I feel like I was not informed, and had I been more informed about hospice and what was going on with my dad, maybe I could have saved him. So be informed, and then also don't trust. I would never trust a hospice worker. Never. So be informed and don't trust. And don't give up the fight.
That's right. Just like you're doing, like tonight, you're literally, I mean, this has been such a powerful show. I mean, I have goosebumps, and, you know, I'm trying not to break down. You know, I do these shows, and it's hard for me, you know, not to cry right here along with you, because my heart just feels the same, because our family went through it, and I know it's horrible. And so, but hopefully this show will be able to provide hope, and we will get feedback on lives that are being saved because of us informing people and making them aware of what's going on. And so that's what keeps me going, is having that hope and just praying that so many people hear what we have to say here on this show. So with that, we're a little bit over, so we're going to end this evening, and I want to thank you so much, and thank you so much to everyone that is tuning into this show and that is sharing it across the internet, across social media. We thank you. I thank TS Radio and Marty Oakley forever for being able to do this show. It's we're saving lives here. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and end, and I will talk to you guys next Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Good night to wherever you are in this world. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
Bye, Susie.